With Bill C-24, the NDP now gets $7 for each vote cast in your favor. How much of that money goes back into your actual riding association for them to fund your next election campaign?
It's a good question. It's $7 over 4 years. So it's $1.75 a year. And I expect there'll be some discussions on that at federal council in the fall, because at this point it's not clear what will happen. Those funds go to the National Party. The National Party is going to put together an election strategy, and that will include development and organizational support, as happens with all parties, in the pre-writ period, in the pre-election period. So it'll be interesting to see over the next few months what the strategic decisions are on how those funds are going to be used. I from what I understand, the party ran a very effective campaign. We have a small debt to pay off, but basically, over the next few months, once that debt is paid off, we can continue the organizing work that's important to preparing the next election. So it'll be interesting to see what decisions are made to see how those funds are allocated.
So if there's an election in 1 or 2 years, you only get $1.75?
It's $1.75 per vote per year. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. So I think there were nearly or just over 2 million Canadians that voted for the NDP in this election. That's certainly up the strongest support we've had in over 15 years of federal elections. So doing the math, that would give us somewhere between $3.5 and $4 million a year in public funding. And I support the idea of public funding. I don't like to see what we're seeing in the United States, where there is almost unlimited funding. It's quite mind-boggling, the millions and millions of dollars that is poured into election campaigns, basically to support candidates who are supporting the interests of their contributors. And seeing Michael Moore's recent film, There's a quote, as I'm sure you've seen, with George Bush, where he says, "I'm glad to be here tonight with the haves and the have-mores." This is a big fundraiser with millionaires that have come out to see George Bush. And then he says, "Some people call you the elite. I call you my base." Well, that is exactly why George Bush has been able to govern the way he has. He receives his funding from the wealthiest of Americans and has provided tax cuts and all kinds of subsidies to the wealthiest of Americans. And the middle class in the United States and poor Americans are suffering as they haven't from since the New Deal and the Great Depression in the 1930s. So that type of private money going in to influence the political system, I disagree with fundamentally. And that's why I support the idea of public funding based on the support that people get, that political parties get, because that means that the public determines who gets that funding. And that's important for consistency and having the kind of level playing field that allows us really to have interesting and important public policy discussions in an election campaign and between elections, because all parties are starting from the same standpoint and all parties are able to contribute depending on their level of public support.
Yeah, I think that's excellent as well. I agree completely with what you just said there. On the topic of the Elections Act, the NDP also supports the changing the first-past-the-post system to a more proportional type representation system. What are the chances that we could get some referendum on this in the next election cycle?
It's a good question, and I think proportional representation is a good, effective way of addressing the democratic deficit. And Paul Martin's paid a lot of lip service to the democratic deficit. We saw during the campaign that he parachuted a bunch of non-elected candidates into Greater Vancouver. So we saw how committed he is to addressing that. But if the if we'd been working in a proportional representation system, the NDP would have gotten between 40 and 50 seats nationwide. So obviously we're underrepresented in Parliament given the strength of our popular vote. Conservatives and Liberals are overrepresented. So proportional representation would help to start to address that. the fact that a party like the NDP is underrepresented is important because we represent the 2 million Canadians, as I mentioned. But also, a proportional representation helps to address historic underrepresentation by groups such as women, for example. Proportional representation allows for more representation across the board, allows political parties to choose their candidates in a way to address representation issues. So visible minorities, women candidates tend to be more prominent because political parties can work through a system or put in place a structure that allows for greater representation from all groups within society. So those are all advantages of it. Now, the question of how we're certainly going to fight on this issue, we'll have to see how far we get. Sometimes there are entrenched interests at work, and we may find we come up against opposition from the Liberals and Conservatives because they like being overrepresented in comparison to the vote that they actually receive. But the reality is there's more and more discussion on this issue. A number of provinces are looking at the possibility of bringing in proportional representation, and it's inevitable in my mind that at some point in the near future we'll be moving towards proportional representation because it makes sense. It provides for more effective representation, and it also allows us to really address the issue of votes counting. It means that a vote counts wherever it's cast in the country for whatever candidate, even if that it may be a candidate for a party that hasn't been strong in that particular region, that vote still counts and in the overall total. So I think it's an issue that will continue to be on the forefront in the coming years.
We were just talking just the last half an hour about the election and the campaign. Let's talk about your campaign office. Have you been out looking for a campaign office at this point in time?
Yes, we're actually looking at a number of constituency offices that we'll be setting up to service the needs of the citizens of the community. One thing I found very interesting is that we won the election on Monday night, and early Tuesday morning, we were receiving our first calls on casework. I mean, there are issues that citizens of this community need help with. So we were right out front and center, and I've basically been responding to calls and making sure that that people are aware that we can assist them. It will be a lot easier once we get the constituency office up and running, and that should happen in the next week or two.
So have you found a location yet?
We have a couple of locations we're looking into, and we're looking really into the central part of the riding. That's either Edmonds down to Kingsway, or Kingsway or 12th Street in New Westminster. So in a fairly limited number of blocks, we're looking for a campaign or a constituency office that will allow us to really provide good service in a central location that's easily accessible.
Okay, that's great. Also was looking on the internet and saw that you're now assigned a portfolio with the NDP. Now you're the International Trade and Globalization Critic, the Persons with Disabilities Critic, and the Treasury Board Critic. Have you been briefed on any of those areas yet?
I'm currently talking with the former critics from our previous caucus, so I'm getting up to speed with Bill Blakey, who is the International Trade Critic, and Bev Desjarlais from Manitoba, who is the Treasury Board Critic, and Wendy Lill, who's the former Member of Parliament from Dartmouth, and she was the critic for people with disabilities. So each of them are helping out in bringing me up to speed, but I should say I have experience in all three areas, and I think that's why Jack Layton, who had a really difficult task in looking around the table and allocating a shadow cabinet or critic portfolios, I think Jack did a lot of work to make sure that people got critic areas that they were well suited for and had experience in. And in my case, I worked as National Executive Director for the Council of Canadians and did a lot of international trade-related work there. when I lived in Ottawa and worked for the council. My current position, or just prior to the election, was executive director for the Western Institute for the Deaf and Hard of Hearing. So I've been involved in disability issues, both in the deaf and hard of hearing community. And as you may know, Burnaby is really the center for the deaf community in the province of British Columbia. We have two deaf schools, the BC School for the Deaf and Victory Hill Residential School. So we have a couple of deaf schools and a vibrant deaf community. So I've had a lot of work and a lot of experience working with the deaf and community, but also working with hard of hearing individuals, those who are blind, and the BC Paraplegic Association, the Canadian National Institute for the Blind, etc. So I think that's why I was given the honor to be given the critic portfolio of people with disabilities. And that brings the third one, the Treasury Board, which is equally important given some of the decisions that are going to be made both in public sector negotiations over the next few months, but also in terms of looking at Treasury Board guidelines that seem to favor Liberal appointees rather than providing a sort of consistent guideline to everybody involved in public service. And my background as a financial administrator, I think, is what led Jack Layton to appoint me to that portfolio for the Treasury Board. So I have some experience in each of the three areas, and I'm going to be relying on our former critics to bring me up to speed, but I feel comfortable in each of those areas. And I think I'd say the same right across the spectrum. The critic portfolios that members of our caucus were given are portfolios that suit them. For example, if we look at British Columbia, we have Bill Sixay, partner in Burnaby, as the Member of Parliament for Burnaby Douglas. So we share Burnaby as our community, and he is handling citizenship and immigration. And he has a lot of experience having worked with Sven Robinson as his constituency assistant in those areas. But he also has the Western Economic Diversification Portfolio and Canadian Human Rights. And then we look at Libby Davies, who is our House leader. She'll be playing an extremely important role in this next Parliament. And Nathan Cullen, who's responsible for environment and youth. He's the Member of Parliament for Skeena-Bulkley Valley. And, of course, offshore oil and gas is going to be an important issue in this next Parliament. And he's led opposition to that in the North Coast. And then Jean Crowder in Nanaimo-Cowichan. And Jean is responsible for women's issues and natural resources. And, of course, given the resource component of her community and her long experience, she'll be equally great in that area. So I think when I look at the five BC MPs, we're all playing an important role. And I think that's also a sign that Jack Layton is putting a lot of importance in British Columbia for this Parliament, but also for the election that will come in the next couple of years.
Yeah, it does appear that the BC caucus has quite a lot of responsibilities, that's for sure. And it looks like you're going to be getting your feet wet pretty soon, especially with the Public Service Alliance of Canada getting close to being in a legal strike position, which means that 100,000 federal public service workers may be hitting the bricks sometime in September. What is the NDP's position with respect to the Public Service Alliance of Canada and their strike position?
Well, we want to make sure that the federal government negotiates in good faith a collective agreement that will cover those employees. So I think it's fair to say, though I'm still being brought up to speed on the file, it's what's happened so far is there have been offers that are really not serious. And I think it would be really tragic if those public sector workers were forced to go out on strike when, if the government just negotiated in good faith, we'd be able to get a good agreement and provide for that ongoing public service that's so important for our country.
Another issue that the federal employees are engaged in right now and is in the media quite glaringly is the whistleblower protection that the public servants have been asking for. Some PIPS people were fired because they had disagreed with Health Canada in allowing some drugs to be available on the market. So what's the NDP's position with respect to the whistleblower protection?
We want to see it because it's absolutely important for protecting the public interest that whistleblowers be protected. And it's shameful what's happened in the last few days with the firings of those three very well-respected Health Canada scientists. It really, really is tragic. And here again, I think this is the worry that when we look at a minority parliament, Paul Martin has two choices. One is to work and really heed what the public has told him on June 28th in the election. The other is to pretend that he's in a majority government situation like Joe Clark did and just forge ahead. And the firings, I think, may indicate that Paul Martin, at least initially, will take this idea that he's really has a majority and can just forge ahead, and in effect, backtrack on a solemn commitment that he undertook during the campaign and previous to it. He talked about whistleblower legislation. That died on the order paper, and the first chance they get, the Liberals seem to want to fire these very dedicated scientists that have terrific reputations, and their only fault is that they basically blew the cover around what was happening for approval through Health Canada. So I hope that we can reverse that, and I strongly believe that whistleblower legislation is sorely needed now more than ever before to protect public servants and others who are legitimately coming forward and saying this is wrong, what is happening, whether that's corruption or approval of medication or foods that should not be approved. It's important that we have that protection for public servants and others.
Excellent. Thanks, Peter. Just on the international trade and globalization portfolio you have, the free trade of the Americas agreement is being negotiated. It's somewhat of a slow process, but it's still in negotiations. Have you been briefed on that? And what is the NDP's position with respect to the FTAA?
Well, our concern with trade agreements generally is some of the provisions that have been brought in. We saw this with NAFTA, with Chapter 11 and the investor state provisions, which basically protect investors to the detriment of what's in the public interest. We've seen with Chapter 11, we've got corporations that have been suing governments for public policy decisions that are in the public's interests, but because it impacts on the profits or the potential profits of these investors, they can sue and get millions of dollars from Canadian taxpayers. That was wrong to put that in NAFTA. It's something that is being pushed in areas like the GATS through the WTO, the General Agreement in Trade in Services, and with the FTAA, the Free Trade Agreement of the Americas. This idea that investors should have more rights than the public, than individuals and citizens. So this is the completely wrong road to take, and this is one of the fundamental aspects when we talk about international trade that needs to be changed. We're talking a lot about investors' rights, we're talking a lot about corporate rights, we're not talking about individual rights, citizens' rights, the right to social programs, the right to labor legislation, the right to protection from unsafe workplaces. So the whole aspect of trade needs to be really turned around so that rather than talking about preserving profits for a very few in within any trade agreement, we're talking about bringing the standard of living and the quality of life up for the many. And so I think this is going to be a bone of contention when we talk about trade, when we talk about FTAA. It's a problem. The Liberals don't get it. They don't get it that corporate rights and investors' rights should not predominate over the rights of publicly elected, democratically elected city councils, for example, or provincial governments to take measures that protect the public, protect the citizens from environmental damage or from neurotoxins. The example that's often given is Ethel Corporation suing and receiving $19 million from Canadian taxpayers when a neurotoxin that had known harmful effects on people was banned. I mean, this is the bizarre aspect of international trade that we really need to change.
Thanks, Peter. You know, I think you're going to do a wonderful job in Parliament for the people of Burnaby, New Westminster, and the people of Canada. You sound very knowledgeable and very strong in your commitments and what you believe in, and I think that's going to be great for the people around here. And I appreciate you coming on to this show and talking to the people in Burnaby, New Westminster, and the Greater Vancouver area about the issues that are important to us. And I invite you back some other time when some new issue hits the floor and we need to have a talk about that too.
Oh, I'd like that. I'd very much like to come back, and thank you for inviting me today.
Thanks, Peter.
Thanks, Shane.
You've been listening to Peter Julian on Labor Radio. I'm Shane Polak.